Hello, everybody. Jay Cooper, Carlos Collazo, Baseball America Draft Podcast. We're getting close. We're getting closer. We have pushed another top 500 update this week. Carlos has been busy writing reports, updating reports, I should say, more than anything. But we are moving guys around as we get more feedback at all.
Yep.
I've written way fewer reports than I want to write, but I am doing it as I can.
The boss man has plenty of other things to do on top of everything that we cover here.
I do love the writing reports. I really do.
It's fun.
It is fun to get into the players. But that's what we're going to do today. So the draft is not that far away. And one of the things that we feel like that, I know you're going to hear this if you are a regular listener every week and go, oh, wait, they're talking about Rochlowski and Grady Emerson and Von Lackey again. And we are. But I promise you there's going to be stuff here that I think that even that we haven't discussed before, while at the same time being very valuable to people who are kind of like, okay, college season's over, NBA's over, NHL's over, now I'm going to pay attention to the MLB draft. If you're one of those people also, we think there'll be a lot here. Mm-hmm. But what we're going to do today is just kind of on each of these three players, kind of make the case for why they could go number one, and then what maybe some of the concerns are and all. And we, again, this is a companion podcast and video to a piece that we have up at baseballamerica.com today that goes into much more detail than we can on this. Like, this is a podcast and a video. Mm-hmm. We would be here for 2 hours if we were going to just cover everything that we have in the story.
Right.
So we're gonna get you a lot. This is not going to be something where we go, Rochlowski, good, take one, good, we're done.
Right.
But at the same time, if you enjoy this, I promise you that the piece over at Baseball America will give you even more context perspective on this. But Carlos, you know, I'm just going to like dive us right in. The one we got to start with, obviously, is so we'll have a discussion on this, but you make the case for the objective case for why Rochlowski makes sense as the White Sox pick at 1-1.
Yeah, I think the most straightforward case for Rochlowski at 1-1 is to say he has been the consensus top prospect in this class for a year now. He possesses four tools that have a chance to be plus or better between the pure hitting ability, game power, defense, and arm. He has been one of the most productive hitters in college baseball, period, over the last 3 years. It's a very short list of players who have been more productive than he has been. And he comes from a rare demographic that makes his talent more unique and more special in the context of the draft. We don't often see high school shortstops of Rochlowski's caliber, who we're aware of at the time he's a prospect in high school, getting to campus in the first place. That is one of the most appealing demographics for big league teams. They draft and sign those players out of high school because of that. The fact that Rochlowski got to college and lived up to and improved his talent level and his potential in his 3 years of college, I think just puts him in exceedingly rare territory. And it almost gives him the sort of upside potential and safety combination that you're dreaming to have if you're picking 1-1. I do think Rochlowski is a generational sort of prospect at the top of the class. He is the best college shortstop prospect since probably Troy Tulowitzki multiple decades ago. And he checks a lot of boxes. You're getting upside, you're getting safety, you're getting track record from a shortstop. That's tremendously valuable.
I'll ask on that one. I would say, like, he's, when you say generational, I'm a little bit more reserved on that one as far as Chulowski. I think he's going to be very good. But when you say since Troy, what we have, obviously, the Dansby Swanson, Alex Bregman year, right? I would say is kind of this really the only year that we have where it's like the top of the draft, you have these multiple college shortstops in consideration. What kind of puts him at a level beyond either of those guys?
Look, if you wanted to say that you think Rochlowski is in a similar tier to those two players, I think that's defensible. If you're either lighter on Rochlowski, you have more concerns with him, or you were just higher on those two at the time. From my perspective in my seat, I feel like the tool set is more dynamic with Rochlowski at the same stage. I feel like, I mean, Dansby Swanson has been one of the better defensive shortstops in baseball. I think Rochlowski has the same or better defensive ability at the same stage. His arm is better. He has more power than probably both of those players at the same stage. I just
think on Bregman coming out, he never hit 10 homers in a college.
Right. And both those players, there were some questions about where they're playing defensively. I think more at the time than we have with Rock now. Rock did play third base his first year at college, which is kind of funny to think back on now, but he has been maybe the best defensive shortstop in college baseball over the course of the last 2 years. And I think, I think you're right to push back on the generational prospect designation, because if you want to reserve those for the Bryce Harpers and the Steven Strasburgs of the world, I think that's fair. Mostly using that tag for Rock, I think it just comes back to just how rare this sort of profile is. A college shortstop going one overall just has not happened very much in the history of the draft. And it goes back to the fact that the supply of elite high school players at that position rarely gets to college. Maybe this will become more common in a draft world that's 20 rounds with NIL. There are a lot of different incentives that could make this more likely in the coming years, but I think at least for now, it's just a package of talent, tools, and safety that you just rarely get.
To just lay this out, now I'm only talking about first round picks, not first round supplementals. And when you come to position classification for draftees, it's always a little tricky, right? Spencer Torkelson technically was announced as a third baseman, even though no one in their right mind thought that he was going to be a big league third baseman. So you have some little flaws with that. But there have only been 10. I looked at, for this little study I'm doing, like 2012 to 2020. So kind of wanted to cut it off at a point where we've got a length of their big league careers. In that stretch, that's 9 drafts. And there were 10 shortstops, college shortstops taken in the first round over that stretch. That's one of the less traveled worlds out there. Like if you want a comparison, there were 12 college first basemen taken in the first round over that time. So it is a rarer demographic. There was as many college catchers taken in the first round. And that's not even talking about like top 10 pictures. That's the first round.
Right.
Even though we had this perception that up the middle college bats are kind of, you know, valued a lot in the first round. But of that group at the same time, only 4 of those 10 in that study produced positive WAR. So that's another thing I would say about this is we also think of this as a very safe demographic. I would say that in the past we have seen that it's not maybe necessarily as, you know, as safe as some of the other demographics that are out there. Mm-hmm. Although when you hit, like we talk about a Dansby Swanson, you talk about an Alex Bregman.
Yeah.
I feel like some people may say, we say Dansby Swanson, they go, well, you don't want to take Dansby Swanson 1-1. You take Dansby Swanson 1-1 every day of the week.
Yes. And I think, I talk a lot about the value of Rock is in the shortstop profile. I think for me, that's the cherry on top, because I don't want to gloss over just how good of a hitter and how impactful he is. Just if you look at some of the most productive power hitters in college baseball, Rock really brings this elite contact to that conversation that is both rare in this class and just rare in college baseball in general. Of the group of 47 college hitters in the last 3 years who have hit 40 home runs, only Chris Hakopian's strikeout rate is better than Rock Chalowski's in that time. His strikeout rate is essentially half of the strikeout rate of that population of player. So it is a potentially elite hit power combination that drives the profile and warrants him being in this conversation to begin with.
What's also interesting with this is there is some concern about how much he pulls the ball in the air. He is hitting with metal bats, but at the same time, he actually, like if you look at, like I look at a lot of times with college hitters and I look at homers and I also look at doubles and triples with that, right? Because doubles and triples are the balls that almost got out generally. I mean, I know you can hit a ball right down the line that's a double, but a lot of those are balls that hit off the wall that are in the gap, but they're well struck. Rock Chalowski gets a lot of, like, his double to homer percentage is very weighted towards home runs. If he gets a ball to drive, it generally clears the fence. It's not something where you say, oh, he's not getting to his power yet, but he will one day. No, he's, you know, again, in the college environment, he's very much getting to his power right now. And again, as you said, doing so in a way that isn't been that he has to sell out to do so. He's a hitter who drives the ball, not a slugger who hopes to make hit.
Correct. Yeah.
I would say the other part of this is, I think this is going to be the case. I'll just give you a little bit of a sneak peek. The reason why all three of these players are candidates to go 1-1 partly also is that I do feel like that if you said, okay, this does not go as we expect right now. We look back on this 10 years from now, Rochelowski is not a generational player that's a pro or anything like that. He's probably still a pretty useful long-term big leaguer, right? Like he's, if you said, look at him compared to some of the shorts, like if you compare him to Brooks Lee, who's been up with the Twins, was a high pick and all that.
I think Nick Madrigal is another good college shortstop example for this.
Although he was really, even like in his case, you were saying this is probably a second baseman who's really not a shortstop.
Right.
You know, guys like that. You know, or I just blanked on his Oregon State running mate. The reason that Nick Madrigal played second base was another.
Kane Grenier.
Yeah. That was a guy who was like, okay, is he going to hit enough? Like there's guys like this. So if you're, I'm not going to say worst case scenario, but the disappointing scenario for Rochelowski is that you just lop, let's say you lop a grade off of every single thing that he does. Mm-hmm. That's still a long-term productive big leaguer. If you say, oh, I was a grade too high on the hit and the power and the field and the throw. Okay, maybe not the speed. The speed's the speed, and it's not really a big asset for him. But you take everything else down, he'd still be a guy that you'd be like, is this guy a regular for us? Yes, absolutely.
Yeah. I think the one area that maybe you could say how could things go wrong for Rochelowski probably centers on his lack of wood bat track record. I think this is probably true for a lot of players in this class. We've mentioned it on this podcast before. But his wood bat track record in college is basically non-existent. And to the degree that it does exist, he's not been a great hitter with wood. He struggled in a 17-game stint in Orleans in the Cape Cod League in 2024. He did not hit well as part of a Team USA team that collectively didn't hit well against Japan a year ago. And so
He did hit .333 in his five games before they went to Japan. So we'll give him that.
But if you're just looking at the total. If you're just looking at the five games, I think he had one hit in that stretch. Now, it was a homer, so maybe you're happy to see that.
But one lucky hit the other.
But I think if you're in, and when we get into how could it go wrong for these players, they are going to be nitpicks inherently because these are top of the class players for a reason. But there are some questions about kind of how Chalowski's swing works from the most critical scouts I talked to. He gets pretty close to a full arm bar. That is a bit of a red flag for some scouts, depending on how you're bearing down on hitting mechanics and how the swing works. He's never pulled the ball in the air to an extreme degree. You mentioned that he doesn't struggle to get to his power. And I think if you wanted to compare him to a Dylan Cruz, he still does have a much higher fly ball rate and a much lower ground ball rate throughout college than Dylan Cruz did at the time. But I think that would probably be your how can it go wrong scenario. We just miss really significantly on the pure hitting ability. And then you could probably see scenarios like you mentioned where he's still productive because the defense is exceptional. There is power there. He's playing a premium position. So I think good fallback options. But maybe if you do miss on the hit tool, you could be looking at one of these other two players we're looking at and saying, hey, why don't we take one of those?
That's the example of Dansby Swanson. Dansby Swanson has not had the hit tool that you would have projected coming out of college. That's by Alex Bregman. I think overall has probably been a little bit of a better player. His hit tool's been better.
Yep.
But at the same time, Dansby Swanson is a 30 war career player because year in, year out, he is a slam dunk plus defender at short.
Yep.
And that gives you just such value. And I will say, like that's where it's like, if Dylan Cruz, who has been disappointing, obviously, so far, still young in his career, but if Dylan Cruz had this kind of defensive profile, it would be a much different story. Like, that's kind of the question. So that's Rochelowski. After the break, we'll dive into the other college player who we think of as in this top tier, Von Lackey. We'll do that right after this quick break. So, Carlos, we're back, and I'll take Von Lackey. I will kind of lay out the case for Von Lackey. So, Von Lackey this year, I would say, had a year that you just don't see from college catchers as a general rule. It's a great year for college catchers in the class, not just for this class, but we also had a lot of college catchers in next year's class who had great years. But you look at what he did. He hit .397, .519, .772, 20 home runs, 15 stolen bases, more walks than strikeouts. And on top of that, went back and reading our scout notes, right? If you're just kind of laying the progression of Von Lackey, everyone liked Von Lackey. Everyone who liked Von Lackey coming into the year really liked him And the scouting report after his sophomore season was, this guy can really catch. He's really athletic back there. This is a potential Gold Glover. He's got an arm. He handles the staff well. He does everything you want to see behind the plate. I just worry about if he's going to ever hit for any power, and I just worry about how much he's going to hit. And that seems now, coming off of the season that I just laid out, to be like, we probably don't talk about his defense enough. Partly that is because catching defense as an amateur is a very difficult skill to evaluate. Mm-hmm. I've known many veteran scouts, very veteran scouts, who are like, right. It's really hard because it's just so different.
I do think, and I'm curious what you think about this, I don't know that Von Lackey's catcher defense is hard to evaluate because it's so apparent to everyone that he's excellent there. I think the trickier elements of catcher evaluation seems to be in that middle ground where you're saying, like, is this catcher good or bad, fringy or above average? Is he going to stick at catcher? But I do feel like catchers like Patrick Bailey coming up, when he was in high school, it was very apparent he was an elite defensive catcher.
Adley Rutschman,
very apparent. The physical tools, the intangibles. I think the most elite amateur catchers kind of show themselves to be that at a very young age. Von Lackey, I feel like, is in that tier. I don't say this hyperbolically when I say the way that scouts are talking about Von Lackey is every bit as impressive as the way scouts talked about Patrick Bailey as a defender at the same stage in college.
And so if you lay that out, like, okay, so why would he be 1-1? Well, I mean, that does put you into, he just had a season this year that would put him, I would say, that would compare favorably, or at least comparably. You talked about with Rock, and we compared him to Bregman and Swanson and Tulowitzki. You really kind of have to go back to Adley Rutschman to find a catcher, a college catcher at a top-notch program who performed like this, both behind the plate and at the plate in their draft year. Like, mm-hmm. This is a impeccable season defensively. And that's, again, that's not a new development. That's much like with Adley Rutschman, where it was like, this guy's a great athlete. He's really special back here. And oh yeah, by the way, he also can hit the middle of the lineup. Von Lackey hits that too.
Right.
And you throw in the hitting that he did this year. And again, I would say with that, like, even the concerns that we had the concerns about his power. Well, mm-hmm. He's hitting with metal, and I'm going to get to the same thing that we talked about with Rock. There is more wood bat record here with Von Lackey. It's just bad. He's never hit. Mm-hmm. He went to Sunbelt League coming out of high school before his freshman year at Georgia Tech, and he hit under 200. He went to the Northwoods League in the year between his freshman and his sophomore years, and he hit under 200. Mm-hmm. He then did 6 games in the Cape in addition to the 8 games I think he played for the college national team, and he hit under 200 in the 6 games in the Cape. Now, these are small snippets, but you could say, okay, there's two parts. I'm going to kind of talk now, explain the other side. If you want to say, okay, what could go wrong here with mm-hmm. Lackey? I don't think the wrong here is still going to be very good.
Right.
In that it's hard to imagine Von Lackey. Joey Bart who is another Georgia Tech catcher, who is viewed, I would say, as a very disappointing number 2 pick. I get that completely. But Joey Bart, when we get done at the end of the day, we're going to look back on Joey Bart, who never has been a star or anything like that, but he's probably going to have 600, 700, 800 or more big league games. He is a positive WAR player. He is someone where, as much as he's not really kind of grabbed, he's been kind of pushed aside now by 2 teams. The Giants got Patrick Bailey and said, this guy's better than this guy, moving on. The Pirates then got him. They have a ton of catchers, and they're like, yeah, he's kind of our spare part. Now the Braves acquired him, and the Braves are not looking for him to be. They've got Drake Baldwin. He's not their everyday dude or anything like that.
Right.
But that's kind of like the nightmare scenario for Von Lackey is that he didn't have this track record of hitting before this year like this. Last year mm-hmm. was solid, but his freshman year he didn't hit. He was a good hitter in high school, but he wasn't considered an elite prospect as a hitter. There was concerns. I would say they've kind of gone away a little bit, but, you know, how much bat speed does he have? Things like that. If you just say, though, like that his evaluation on his hit tool, when you can also throw in the very favorable hitting environment of Georgia Tech, His home road splits are very slanted towards 15 of his 20 homers came at home. All that. You lay that all out. And you say, let's say he's two grades worse as a hitter and two grades worse as a his power is than we think right now. That's a major miss on the evaluation. That is four grades between hit and power, two of the most important grades. Even if that happened, I think Von Lackey would have a long and productive big league career because the bar as a good defensive catcher is so low.
Right.
And then if you say he is the hitter we think he is the slugger we think he is the athlete we think he is. This guy played 10 games at third base last year and was it wasn't something like, why do they have him out there? That was just kind of giving a little bit of a break. And he can do that. Like, there's plenty of scouts who think he could play elsewhere. You put it all together, Carlos, and I just think there's just a very high floor here, but also with the ceiling of, look at what an Adley Rutschman is best.
I think, the way I would put it in kind of a quick sentence is if he hits, he's a perennial all-star. If he doesn't hit, he's still a very valuable big league player. Again, I think Patrick Bailey is pretty useful in pointing to here. Patrick Bailey from 2023 to 2025 was either 20 to 30% worse than the league average hitter, and he was still a 2.5 F-WAR or better player, according to Fangraphs, in those 3 years. So one of the worst major league hitters still providing 2 to 3 WAR per season because the catching is elite, I think is a realistic path for Von Lackey if the hit tool and the improvements that he's shown don't live up to our current expectations. And I do kind of wonder where you stand on that growth, because I've talked with scouts who look at a Rock Chulaski or a Drew Burris sort of career trajectory, and they say, hey, why haven't you made more progress from year to year? You kind of set this high baseline and then you maintain it, versus a player like Von Lackey, who significantly less highly talented in high school, much more dramatic offensive transformation from sophomore year to junior year. Are you more encouraged with that career arc, or does the lack of high level performance maybe scare you a bit? I think I tend towards the latter. And I also wonder, if you look at just for his career at Georgia Tech against 93 mile per hour pitches or harder, he only has 3 of his 30 home runs against that velocity. So that, in addition to the wood bat track record that you talked about, does have me a little bit concerned about the pure quality of the hit tool. And I guess not the hit tool, because he's made a lot of contact for multiple years, just the impact of the bat, I'll say.
I think that's where like the most realistic that this ends up is like, okay, what if he's a 45-50 hitter with 35-40 power in the majors, you know, down the road? That's possible, right? Like if these little signals kind of get stronger. To answer your question, I would say that if he had not hit at all last year, I would be much more worried about this, right? Like his freshman year, he hit 214, 330, 381. If he hit that last year and you said this year came out of nowhere, I'd be like, oh, that's scary. He was a 347, 421, 500 hitter last year. The only thing he didn't do last year at Georgia Tech, as their everyday catcher, the only thing he did as a sophomore is he had 6 home runs. This year he had 20. But like, there was really a pretty significant track record there from a standpoint of like, this is the guy who was USA Baseball's catcher coming out of his sophomore year. This was not a guy who it's like, we looked around and no one had him on our boards the year before, and now he's the top pick. No.
Entering the year without that power surge, we had him in the back of the first round. Yeah, him and Ryder Helfrich right at the back.
To finish up with you, like, the other thing that I wanted to kind of just point out, like one of our pieces, we have a piece coming up about this too, like just kind of looking at the demographics of it. I wanted to know, this is what kind of started this study, is like, I kind of felt like that catchers at the top of the draft and first rounders, college catchers are very risky, because you think of Henry Davis.
And you think of them being, it's kind of this like Jekyll and Hyde profile situation where the catching profile is so valuable and super elite, but there's also so much of a durability question and like, are you going to get hurt? How many games are you going to play? I feel like there is a wear and tear of the position. You see this a lot with just elite offensive players who might actually be able to catch, but teams prefer to move those elite hitters off the position because they're like, hey, we need to prioritize the bat. We want you in the lineup every day. We think this will be more beneficial for you offensively. It is such a grind of a position. I do think there is a lot of risk you take on just inherently with what you're asking those players to do defensively.
Small samples, as we said, I'm looking for 2012 to 2020, and there were 10 college catchers taken over that time. Mm-hmm. But of those 10, they all made the majors. Okay. Woohoo. 8 had positive war. Okay, still. That's a pretty low bar. That's where you take pick at the top of the draft. But when you look at like
this five is first war, round catchers for this.
First round.
Okay.
5 war career, 10 war career, they actually have the highest success rate of 10 plus war careers of any draft demographic, like high school catcher, college catcher, high school first baseman, college first baseman, all that. We did group outfielders together.
Right.
Pitch right-handers, high school right-handers, college right-handers, like all those demographics. The only one that was higher was high school shortstop. That's it. So from that standpoint, like if you wanted to also like make a, I'm trying to look at what the data shows me.
Right.
I would say that that also lays out the case because it's like, if you look, it's easy to remember Zach Collins, Henry Davis, Kevin Parada. Those are, I would say like, and I'm working in some guys who are more recent, obviously Bryce, right. More recent than that. But then you mentioned Bailey, you've got Austin Wells, you got Adley Rutschman, you got Shea Langeliers, you got Will Smith, you got Taylor Ward, you got Kyle Schwarber. Like one thing about this is that even with the catchers, like who you're like, is Kyle Schwarber going to be a big league catcher? At the end of the day, I was like, who cares? Right. That was a legitimate, that's not a, they called him a catcher. Like he went out as a catcher. He caught in the big leagues. And then mm-hmm. they're like, Taylor Ward went out as a catcher and then became an outfielder.
Yeah.
But there's a lot of those guys where you're like Shea Langeliers took a little while to figure it out, but that guy can mash.
Mm-hmm.
There's just a lot here. So
yep.
I'll let you sum it up, but like,
yeah, I'd say that is a great, it's better. It's a better hit rate than I would have expected for that demographic. And I'll say just to maybe underline one of Von Lackey's most exciting qualities is he's an outlier athlete for the position on top of the defense. So if the hit power combination is just as good or better than we're expecting, he also has paths to real value playing other positions. I think he could be a legitimate outfielder and be a pretty good one. There are some scouts who think he could play third base. So there are just a lot of paths of value with Von Lackey that could make him a really, really interesting pick here.
Okay. So that is the case for Von Lackey. After one more break, we'll be back to talk about Grady Emerson and why he would make sense at 1-1. So Carlos, kicking it back to you to lay out the case for high school shortstop, Grady Emerson.
Yeah, well, I've been talking to some smart people recently, and they say the high school shortstop demographic in the first round of the bonus pool era is the most successful demographic there is. So that's a good starting point. But I do think the case for Grady Emerson lies on his hitting ability. If you believe that the hit tool is the most impressive tool you can have, Grady Emerson should be the first overall pick. He is the best pure hitter in this class. He is leagues ahead of where Von Lackey was at the same stage in his career. He is in a different tier at the same stage as Rock Chulowski at this point in his career. His hitting track record is as deep and as thorough and as impressive as you can imagine for a high school hitter to have between USA Baseball, 3 years at talented high school in Texas against good competition, 1 year as a senior where the competition probably did decrease a little bit with his transfer. But again, he was lights out this spring. His travel ball track record, his showcase track record, everywhere Grady Emerson has gone, he has hit. He has hit at a high level. He has a pretty unimpeachable swing mechanically, I would say. I've not talked to a single scout in the last 2 or 3 years that we've been covering Grady Emerson who basically had anything negative to say about how he does it in the box at all. I think his approach is supremely advanced for his age. His ability to see the ball, to recognize pitches, to stay balanced in his swing, to use the entire field. And this sounds like a bit of a cliche, but I do think Grady Emerson is the sort of natural hitter who has developed his strength and power and is beginning to hit for more power and impact without selling out for it. I do think he's shown a lot more impressive exit velocities this spring. The home runs have jumped. And so you're seeing him get to some of this natural power without the approach or the contact skills depreciating in any real way. The other most obvious separator, I think, for Emerson compared to Rock Chulowski and Von Lackey is that he's a left-handed hitter. And when we're kind of looking for fine separators at this level, I think there's a huge advantage to being a left-handed hitter. You're going to get the platoon advantage much more often throughout your career. It's going to help the home to first time. And while I do think the argument lays squarely on Grady Emerson's pure hitting ability, he's not just a bat either. He's a very good shortstop. He runs well. He has a plus arm. He's extremely well-rounded. There's not a single tool I can point to and say, hey, you're bad at this area. This is an area where you need to improve. I think maybe the biggest question is just how much power is he going to hit for with wood at the next level, and therefore what is the ultimate upside with him? That's kind of the case. As I'm talking through it, it's a fairly compelling case. So if you're someone who's a fan of Grady Emerson or you just like this demographic, that's the case that I would make.
So let me lay this out. Here is, we're not going to go last year's Eli Willets or anything like that. It's too soon. Mm-hmm. But here is every high school shortstop taken since 2012 in the top 10 picks. I'll just go in order. Connor Griffin, Jackson Holliday, Tamar Johnson, Marcelo Meyer, Jordan Lawler, Bobby Witt Jr., CJ Abrams, Royce Lewis, Brendan Rodgers, Nick Gordon, Carlos Correa. Now, I will
pretty
say,
group.
I left out Cornelius Randolph, who was a shortstop in high school, but the Phillies announced him saying he will never play shortstop. They announced him as an outfielder on day one.
We should really criticize teams who do it like that because they're messing up the historical searches.
Yes. but okay. But he never played a game of shortstop in the pro baseball. I'm not counting him.
Yep.
Tamar Johnson, I'll count. He was a middle infielder who played a little bit of short and second, even though everyone knew he was going to be a second.
A little more Nick Madrigal-y there. Yep. Mm-hmm.
Okay. Of that group, I would say that there is, if we're tearing it out, Nick Gordon had a big league career, but of no real significance. Okay. Mm-hmm. Was up for a while, but if you took him top 10, you probably do look back on it and go, okay, we probably could have gone a different direction better. Mm-hmm. Tamar Johnson, I hate to say it, because when we talk about Grady Emerson, no one now doubting his hitting tool, I will say, the last one that was like that was Tamar Johnson, who
a central piece of my what could go wrong argument was going to revolve around our understanding of and the industry's perception of Tamar Johnson's hit tool. I think we can get to that, but yeah, keep going through your
so he right now is, again, if you look at what he's doing in AAA right now, he's got a Rule 5 decision at the end of the year. I think that's going to be a difficult decision. Mm-hmm. And as I always like to say, if you get to do we protect our top 10 pick in the draft, in the Rule 5 draft, and you're like, oh, let's see which way we go, that didn't work out well.
Right. Okay.
So that's that tier, right? So let's say that's two. I would say Jordan Lawler can't stay healthy for a minute and a half. Mm-hmm. Jury's still out. He's been an elite prospect at times in his career. Now he's graduated, but he's still not an established big leaguer. Let's give that. That's three, right, of the 11. Okay. Beyond that, I would say Marcelo Meyer and Jackson Holliday fit into the let's see what they do. However, if you had to do over again, you probably very much look at doing it over again. Mm-hmm. So there, I would say but they're very young and still in their careers.
Right.
I think you could even say Royce Lewis, it's been ups and downs, but again, you look at that draft, you would do it again because you'd probably take Hunter Green, but you'd definitely take him over Brendan McKay. You'd take him over Kyle Wright. You'd take him over a lot of the guys in that class. Then you have, though, this is the point I wanted to make, and I'm sorry it's being long-winded. But again, you could throw Brendan Rodgers in the productive big leaguer for quite a while, but not a star. But if you said, hey, can I give you Bobby Witt Jr., Connor Griffin, Carlos Correa, CJ Abrams, that category? Mm-hmm. Well, that's, in the cases of Griffin and Witt, that could be you've turned your franchise around.
Correct.
And in the cases of these other guys, like Carlos Correa, you can say now gold glove shortstop, at his prime and all that. But Carlos Correa had as much, if not more, concerns about his defense in 2012 than Grady Emerson does now. Both of them, Carlos Correa was thought to be, he was going to be a very good third baseman, just so big.
I think this group of players that you mentioned actually leads really nicely into what are the concerns with Grady Emerson, because one of the things that stood out to me about the group of success stories you laid out there is all of those players have more dynamic athleticism and secondary tools than Grady Emerson has. I would say Grady Emerson is a much more well-rounded, player than Tomar Johnson at the same stage. He is a different tier of shortstop defender. He's a different tier of runner. He has a more prototypical and projectable frame. But I do think a lot of the value with Grady Emerson comes on nailing the hit tool evaluation. If you don't nail the hit tool evaluation with Grady Emerson, if he is not the plus or plus plus hitter you think or expect him to be, you're losing a significant amount of value. Because while I do think he could still be a really solid player and add value in a lot of areas, he does not have the defensive upside currently that Von Lackey and Rock Chulowski have. He does not have the current raw power that Von Lackey or Rock Chulowski have. Speaking out of both sides of my mouth, you could say, okay, he's much younger. We can project and dream on more to come. Yes, you can do that, but there's also just a lot more risk that comes with doing that, a lot more uncertainty. And we've talked about this a lot throughout the draft cycle, but in some ways, it really does feel like Grady Emerson is kind of an inversion of your typical profile comparisons. He feels like a higher floor, safer sort of player because of the hit tool and maybe less upside, because his secondary tool set is very good. Every time I talk about Grady Emerson, I worry about underselling his secondary tools because we don't have him graded out as even fringe average at a single tool. That's a very well-rounded player, but it isn't the sort of power, speed, size combination that Connor Griffin had. It's not the defensive brilliance and instincts and power that Bobby Witt Jr. had. It's a different player. I think he is more along the lines of an Eli Willits from a year ago, a Kevin McGonigal and J.J. Weatherholt now. I think those are two examples of the sort of value you could get. Very polished at the plate, great plate discipline, maybe more doubles power than homers, but because he's one of the game's elite hitters, he's an extremely productive offensive player. Kevin McGonigal has been better at shortstop than I think a lot of scouts expected him to be, probably solid average or above average right now. I think Grady Emerson could be that. And then if it's the J.J. Weatherholt path where you move off the position, I think Grady Emerson could be a plus or better defender at either second or third. But those players have lived up to their pre-draft hitting expectations, and I think that's a lot of the reason why they have value.
When you were saying that, it made me think of this. If you look at the top of the draft and you say, where does it go wrong the most for position players? It's the hit tool, because Correct. It is the most difficult. We talked about difficulty evaluating catcher defense, but it's always been true that evaluating the hitter is the toughest part. And what you're saying here is again, this is not the case against Grady Emerson, but it really is true. You are taking on, if you say I'm taking Grady Emerson 1-1, if you say I'm taking Von Lackey 1-1, we just kind of laid out, I really can't imagine a scenario where you look back on this 5 years and now, barring catastrophic injury or something, where you're like, well, we got nothing out of that. You can't do that very often. You can't go 1-1 and get nothing. You're going to get something out of it. With Rock Chulowski, you're going to get something out of that. Because again, if in both cases you miss on your evaluation of them as a hitter, the defense is going to take you so far. But when you talk about Grady Emerson, even if, again, not that he's going to be the rock bottom evaluation of his defense, but like you just laid out, if he's not an impactful defender, and that's probably not his game, like that's not his game compared to Jacob Lombard in the same class, right?
Right.
If you get Jacob Lombard's hit tool wrong, you're like, okay, you're a lesser version of what we've seen with his older brother, where it's like, but the defense and the instincts and all that's going to carry you to the big leagues. If you get it wrong here with the hit tool, it's much more of, like we said, that kind of example of the player who you look back on and go, oh, like Spencer Torkelson's a very weird guy to compare to Grady Emerson.
Yeah.
But we were all wrong on Spencer Torkelson. It's a weird year and all that. Like we had COVID and all that, but the industry, and I say, but we, like, I'll say me, I was wrong. He is not as good a hitter as I thought he was. The track record he had in college is about as good as you could have. And it ends up, not that this has made him a zero, but he strikes out more than you expected. The impact's not as much. Those kind of misses are just much easier to do than you took this catcher who you think's a stud defender. Patrick Bailey has fallen short of the hitting projections that he had, and his hitting projections weren't very good, but they didn't have him as a 20 hit tool, and he's been a 20 hit tool. But it's okay. because of everything else. That would be, I think, for Grady Emerson, is you better be a team that you feel confident about your ability to evaluate hit tools, and you better be rock solid on it. Then you can have the case for him at number one. Mm-hmm. If you're even like, I don't know, I'm not sure.
Or if you think the gap between the hit tool is just not the degree that we've laid out here. Yeah, I think you would have to go towards another option that has just more elsewhere. Yeah.
But even then, like I said, it's hard to believe Grady Emerson is not going to be a useful big leaguer just because, like, Brendan Rodgers, I think, is a good example of this. Brendan Rodgers fell far short of the expectation at the time. He was considered. We talk about that Dansby class. It was like those
three. Yeah, he was right in there in that three. It was the big three more than the big two. Yeah.
But Brendan Rodgers is a productive big leaguer for a long time.
That's kind of my takeaway from this conversation, JJ, is I really feel like the top three of this just class is just, it's really good. It's easy to see paths to value in a myriad of ways for all these players. I would feel comfortable with all of them. I'm curious if you find yourself leaning towards one player more than another at this stage, or maybe more skeptical of one player. I would still go chalk on our board. I would go Rock, then Grady, then Vaughn. I do think I'm personally a little bit more concerned with the hit power profile of Von Lackey. I think for whatever reason, there have been some like Georgia college players, both at the University of Georgia and Georgia Tech, where there seems to be a lot of noise in the production at that park and just college hitting in general. I'm just more comfortable with the track record.
Charlie Condon's inability to be an impact big leaguer so far.
As well as the Georgia Tech catcher track record of recent years.
Joey Bart,
yeah.
Kevin Parada. Mike Nickias, you could throw Mike Nickias into that if you want. You know, like they are catcher you, but they haven't had, you have to go back to Matt Wieters for the guy who's the slam dunk. And even Matt Wieters, I know a lot of people are like, oh, he's disappointing. No, Matt Wieters was really good till he kind of broke down.
Right.
But, you know, and Jason Veritek, by the way, really good. Like, so it's not
so
like,
where
it's
do you
like
lean oh, here?
No one's produced, they've never produced a catcher. But I do think that there is, it's not crazy to say though that, again, I know area scouts turn over, but there's a lot of area scouts who saw Charlie Condon, who, by the way, had a season better than what Daniel Jackson's doing and better than what Von Lackey's doing and better than what Drew Burris is doing. His season, his college player of the year season,
insane,
is one of those seasons that you stare at it and you're like, this happened. Because like batting average, power, everything. I get it where it's like there could be some like hangover from that of like, I've seen this before. But to answer your question, it actually probably leads me a little bit more to the idea that it's not crazy that the White Sox could be sitting here going, we're going to look at all three. We're going to talk to all three. And I don't mean from a standpoint of we're just seeing who will take a haircut and that's who we're going to take.
Yeah.
But at the same time, if you said player A wants 100% of bonus, just theoretically, player B wants 95% and player C wants 75%, okay, if you think player C is as good as player A, at least you think about it, right? Like, because right. I do think if you asked me right now to line it up, I think between Lackey and Chlowski, we didn't even get into it. It's in, more in the story at baseballamerica.com. Take away the, strip away the traditional statistics for these guys, the home run splits and all that. Just look at the underlying contact rates, swing decisions, power, you know, EVs, all these things, right? It is remarkable. If I took those two players and put them side by side and said, which of these two is better? I could make the case for either one of them. But really, I would say, like, is this one season, season one and season two from the same player? Because they're that similar. They have similar contact rates. They have similar EVs. They have similar, you know, like swing decision rates. Now, Lackey's a little bit more patient than Rock. I think Rock kind of, I would say that there's a context to that, which is that Von Lackey was in a lineup where he knew, like, if I take a walk, there's six guys behind me, all of whom could hit a homer. And Rock was in a lineup where it's like,
we if saw UCLA this lineup wasn't slouches for, I would say, like three quarters of the season.
It wasn't slouches, but at the same time, you do see like that. I watching his at bats, you could see times where he would take his at bats, he'd take his walks, he would take his hit by pitches. He got hit a lot, but he also at times we would see like, especially in this regional, I felt like I've got to do it here. And sometimes he got a little bigger because of that. I think that that's something Lackey never felt the need to do because of that lineup. It's a fun, fascinating debate. We will continue to have it all the way up to draft day. which is not that far away. Still a ways away, but not that far away now. Any final thoughts, Carlos?
No, I think it's a fun class. I'll be curious if you guys feel strongly. We're going to do some draft chats going ahead. I'll try and make sure I do a poll. I like polling to see what our readers think, who they would take 1-1. We did that last year. That was fun. We haven't done it yet. So if you guys have any thoughts on who you would take, we'd love to hear from you as always. But no, this was a fun conversation, JJ.
It's a fun conversation. We did limit it to three. I would say like in the deep cut version of this, we would also talk about, say, like Jackson Flora and Eric Booth and see like, hey, can I make a case for either of those guys? Mm-hmm. But it's a fun discussion. Again, so much more over at baseballamerica.com. And if you have your thoughts on Rock versus Vaughn versus Grady, also feel free to leave it in our YouTube comments. We, you know, I do try to comment on those, and you know, I try to give answers if people ask questions, and sometimes even politely kind of correct when someone says things like, oh, the, you know, the best coaches and the best paid coaches are all in Major League Baseball. It's like, no, some of them are in college. Ask Wes Johnson. Stuff like that. So we have a lot more of that at YouTube, at baseballamerica.com, and on the podcast feed. For Carlos, I'm JJ. So long, everybody.